This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back, Red Sox Nation. Nick the Voice here, joined tonight by Chris Felico, Doug Acheson, and Jeremy Schilling. We are the Bastards of Boston, and there is a lot of hubbub in the Red Sox world, of course, coming off that surprising but not unpredicted Wilson Contreras trade. And there's a lot of speculation now. We're just going to open right up with the show. Some rumors about Brian Bello being quietly shopped. That is the rumor that's going through the grapevine right now. Apparently some inside sources saying that the Sox are not overtly, but quietly shopping Bello around, which I think makes a lot of sense. Of course, we just lost Dobbins in the trade to the Cardinals. We lost Fitz, of course, in the other trade to the Cardinals. And, you know, people are looking at our starting depth and whatnot, but Bello, I think, is one of those guys who is a candidate for a trade. I think he's not necessarily untouchable by any means, you know, and that's maybe being polite. What is your reaction to the news, Chris? What do you think about this rumor that Bello's being shot?
Well, it's not shocking. I mean, I think as soon as the Oviedo trade happened, one of the first things I said in the war room was that I feel like Brian Bello is expendable at this point. And it's not that he's not a good player, but I mean, at this point, I think all of us would agree he's not going to become the pitcher we had all hoped he was going to become when we handed him that long extension. To me, this is where it gets a little bit dicey now, is now that we're trading all these pitchers, like you said, Dobbins and Fitz are gone. Our depth at the major league level that we can count on has obviously shortened, if you will. And unless you're going to go out there and go and get an actual number two, which I, again, do not think Sonny Gray is, this could backfire pretty mightily, especially at the age that Sonny Gray is. So, again, I'm all for it if it's about going out there and getting a bona fide number two. If you aren't, then this is not the move after the moves we have made in sending Fitz and Dobbins to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, I agree, Chris. I don't like the idea of shopping Bello right now. I think he's, you know, everyone complained about him being the number two, but I really like him as a number three. I think he's a really good pitcher. I think he had a bad performance in the playoffs, but he's a big reason why we got there, and he's building on stuff. And unless it's, you know, a blockbuster move that no one can complain about, I don't like the idea of trading him at all.
Yeah. If you trade Bello, who's the number two?
Right.
Sonny Gray and his 91-mile-an-hour fastball at 36 years old, you know, with all the innings he's thrown. What are we doing here? And the answer is we can shed the salary before the big numbers kick in. And I haven't brought up the contract details on Spotrac. I'm sure we could do that if necessary. But this, to me, is like anything else. We get Sonny Gray. Well, why did we get Sonny Gray? Because they paid 15 whatever million it was. We get Contreras. They're paying him $8 million. So this is just, to me, a money-saving move, and I'm not here for it. I don't care about John Henry's money. I care about my baseball team. These are not what's best for the team decisions. This is the middling thing that you do in this structure. The Cardinals are at the start of it with Heim Bloom, right? They're dumping contracts and just getting young. This is what you do when you think you're close, but it's only cost-effective deals. I hate to break it to Red Sox Nation. We were never serious on Alonso. We were never serious on Soto. We were never serious on Bo Bichette. We're not serious on anything other than a one-year deal for Bregman. Nothing the Sox do are what's absolutely best for the baseball product. It's all about what's cost-effective, what's efficient, which is a word I absolutely can't stand. So I think Breslow is doing the best he can with the tools he's being provided. But at the end of the day, when John Henry, through Sam Kennedy, say, Breslow, you got to stay underneath the tax threshold. We don't want to commit long-term dollars. Nothing over 3 years unless we're buying out arbitration years. A Crochet deal or a Roman Anthony deal or a Christian Campbell deal. But now Bayo is at that point where I think the money goes up and, hey, we could save another whatever millions of dollars here and go get two relievers and make sure we have room under the threshold. That's all this is. It's all this is. This is being run by like a hedge fund now, and it's all about dollar bills, not about the product. I hate John Henry.
I think that's valid. You know, you look at Bayo's contract situation, which you alluded to, and it is a pretty fair deal, I think, for both parties. I think when he signed it, there was a lot of upside. Even right now, if you look at Bayo just as a reliable 2-3 war pitcher, you know, he's going to be a good back end of the rotation guy at the end of the day, maybe a ceiling of a number 3, number 2. But the money's going to balloon pretty quick. And you're right. You know, when you look at both our organization or even the prospects of trading a guy like that, you know, in 2028, his salary doubles from the previous year. I'm looking at the next 5 years here. It goes from $6 million to $8.5 million. To 16, to 19, to a $21 million player option. That gets out of hand pretty quickly. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily terrible by any means, but not necessarily the guy that you want to be spending $21 million on potentially. Still, you get a reasonable sort of early contract return in those next 2 years. It's just very interesting, though. You know, Bayo is one of those pitchers where trading him in a vacuum, I'm totally fine with. And I think for the right price, I mean, you've got to be fine with it. Some people are saying, you know, maybe package him in a deal for an elite number 2 pitcher. I don't necessarily see too many teams doing that. You know, if you're going to be trading Bayo, I would almost expect him to be the headline of a trade, or at least a co-headliner of a trade for a guy like Marte, who the Red Sox are reported to be backing off of now. But, you know, Bayo has a lot of red flags for me. You know, he had a great season ERA-wise, but funnily enough, everyone talks about Sonny Gray being a FIP merchant. Bayo's kind of the opposite, where the FIP is regularly somewhat concerning, and this last year was no difference. Despite having a 3.35 ERA, a 4.19 FIP, which is identical to his 2024, funnily enough, when his ERA was I think a little more than a full point higher, actually. The strikeouts came way down. Obviously, this is a guy who relies on ground balls. We're a team who isn't really fielding ground balls very well. So, you know, there's a lot of factors to it. So it's one of those things that, like, just like with the trade for Contreras, I like it in a vacuum, but I'm concerned about it in the context of the team because, of course, like you guys alluded to, Bayo goes out of the picture. Suddenly, our depth is looking very short. We don't have Fitz to maybe be a bounce back candidate. We don't have Dobbins to maybe build on his previous year. Instead, you have Crochet being the obvious ace. You have Sonny Gray being what, you know, clearly the organization is hoping is going to be a number 2 pitcher. And then, you know, just looking at the depth chart here, who do you have? You have Sandoval, you have Crawford, both who have gone an entire year without pitching at the major league level. You have Early and Toley and Harrison and Uberstein, who are all incredibly young, and who knows where that could go. You have Oviedo, who the Pirates traded for a reason, you have to imagine. You have Houck, who goes without saying what went on with his season. So it is funny how the position of strength in the starting pitching, right, can so quickly become a position where you're left wanting more.
Yeah, I mean, we're a significant injury away, even at the bottom of the rotation, of this becoming a huge question mark if Early doesn't become what we hope he can immediately, as far as even on the back end of the rotation. Peyton Tolley, I mean, based on what I did see, I mean, unless he can obviously develop some additional pitches in his arsenal and start to get better control of that fastball, I don't see him as someone who's going to be a solution to this rotation. Not at this point. I see him being more of a bullpen arm. And, you know, Jeremy made a good point, is maybe it is a matter of like, yes, it's a reasonable team-friendly deal. But I think to your point, Nick, it's a team-friendly deal if Bayo was really going to materialize into that number two that we really hope for, or a borderline one. And I don't think he is at this point. Yes, to your point, Doug, he was a big reason of why we got to the playoffs, but I could care less about getting to, I mean, not that I don't want to get to the playoffs, so I don't want to understate that, but it's about now winning playoffs. It's taken us so damn long to get back to the playoffs that doesn't quench my thirst. I want to get there and I want to win and I want it to be sustainable and be a true contender in the American League while it's at its weakest for the maybe next couple of seasons at this point, unless the Blue Jays just become the Dodgers of the American League, which it looks like they may very well become starting with this offseason. If they get some of these players like Kyle Tucker, they re-sign Bo Bichette, make a trade for Skubal. I mean, everything's on the table for them. You know, where I would say I could see Bayo getting us a number two is if you do, I would agree, he would have to be the headline. But if you package him with a Duran or somebody else where it's a team that's really needing an outfielder and they're like, hey, you know what? We've got good enough pitching depth. Like maybe they have a bunch of threes, whereas we're kind of have a bunch of fours and like 1-3 and not really a two. I could see that being a case where maybe we are able to get a borderline number two. But I do agree with you that it's not like you're not swapping quote-unquote twos Bayo for someone else's two. It's just not happening. I do see him being more of a headline candidate for a Ketel Marte. And at that point, if you do that, then you're forced to go out there and sign like maybe a Ranger Suarez, which to me, Ranger Suarez with his, you know, statistics, especially in the playoffs, he could be a number two. And then I feel good about Sonny Gray as a number three with some of the, you know, remaining depth that we have. But I just, it's hard for me to imagine the Red Sox doing all those things. It's a lot of moving parts, a lot of potential money that's got to be spent. And I mean, let's not ignore the other elephant in the room. We still don't have the other bat.
Yeah. And I hear you on, you know, you don't really care about the regular season, which is it's, like, I hear you, but it's just, he's proven to be a good pitcher. And we talk about all this, you know, depth that we have. We have a lot of depth of unproven guys, right? And, you know, Bayo, I think Bayo is, you know, is he a number two? Probably not. But he's, you can make the argument that he's maybe a borderline two. And is trading him for a number two, like, that much of a bigger move that's going to get us so much better? I don't know. Maybe. It depends who it is, I guess. But like I said, unless it's a real blockbuster move that he's the headline of, I would like him in the middle of our rotation. I just think he's I think he's been getting better, and I think, you know, last year was his best year he's ever had, and he's at the age where this year will be the best year he's ever had again.
I certainly hope so. I mean, you know, Brian Bayo, I like him. You know, I like him as a person. I like him as a player. I like what he's done for the Sox, and I do think that there's a place for him on this team. You know, and that's almost like one of those situations where it's enviable, right? You want to be in that situation where you have a guy that you could trade, but you don't have to, you know? And that's a nice position to be in because suddenly you have a lot of leverage, which I think the Red Sox have kind of been lacking. If you really think about it, we entered this offseason with a clearly defined set of needs, and clearly in their own organization, the Red Sox knew we don't have the money to spend on Ranger Suarez. We don't have the money to spend on Dylan Cease. And so they went out and they got Sonny Gray. And then we don't know how interested they really were in Pete Alonso. Obviously, they lowballed him. He went to the Orioles instead. And so suddenly they go for a consolation prize with Wilson Contreras. And it's just such a funny thing but it does speak volumes, doesn't it, about where the priorities of our organization are. The fact that money has been eaten on both of those trades, that we're not just looking for a starting pitcher, we're not just looking for a first baseman, we're looking for a starting pitcher and a first baseman where you're going to retain some of the money there. It just goes to show that this organization is sort of up against a wall with its priorities. You know, Jeremy, you keep railing about John Henry's wallet, and I think that that is the biggest thing to be angry at right now. It's a misallocation of resources. You know, spending $25 million on Trevor Story, spending $18 million on Masataka Yoshida, stuff like that. But then it's also the fact that, you know, this organization just clearly isn't willing to go too far over. Right? We've heard that 264 number. And that seems like the magic fit right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, one thing you said is we don't have the money. To be very, very clear, we were the most profitable team in Major League Baseball, so that's BS. Just John Henry setting a number, and he's not going to go over it. He's running a light bulb business, a printer, you know, whatever, where he's just sticking to the budget. He doesn't care what the product is. If people are still consuming it, he wants to maximize his revenue dollars. That's all this is. And by the way, and I know I had to step away for a second, Bayo, in my mind, is our number two. We argued through the balance or the middle of last season, whether it was Bayo or Giolito. By the end of the season, I think we all agreed Bayo was the number two. Giolito gets hurt, so he's really not there to see what you're going to get from him. What's changed? 36-year-old Sonny Gray and Oviedo, who we don't know what he's going to be in Boston. Like, Bayo's our number two. And I know we can all have a different opinion, but in my mind, he is your number two. So if you're moving on from Bayo, are you doing it to make the program better, to be a competitor? Do you need Bayo maybe to pull somebody like Joe Ryan? Then fine. Like, even though I do think he's our number two, if you're upgrading that spot by packaging him, prospect, whatever, fine. But that's not what's going to happen.
I totally agree. I mean, he was our opening day starter 2 years ago, right? And then we get, you know, a top three pitcher in baseball. He says, okay, takes a step back to the number two. You're going to make him take a step back again for Sonny Gray? He's like he's a Red Sox. You know, he is a Red Sox his whole career.
They don't care.
Yeah.
You have to understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone thinks they care. Like, you want to default to that. And I'm the same way. Right. But like, I've been on this train for a couple of years now. So like, I'm past like the denial stage. They don't give a bleep about what the fan base thinks. If they did, they would have signed Alonso. If they did, they'd go put a package together and overpay for Joe Ryan. The last time they did, John Henry got booed at a Winter Classic game and made the decision to sign Rafael Devers for 10 years and $300 million. He immediately had buyer's remorse and trades him after he hits a home run against the Yankees mid-flight. Because as soon as the opportunity got out from underneath that emotional decision, he got out from underneath it. And what he said is, I'm not going to be lulled into making emotional decisions as the owner of this franchise. Us fans, we want to be emotional. We want the best product possible. We're being run by a robot who doesn't give a crap. Pittsburgh Pirates are profitable. I'm going to sell them. I don't care. These are all, everything this guy does is a business decision. He doesn't care about your baseball team, Red Sox fans. He doesn't care. He wants it to make as much money as he possibly can make. That's it, period.
So now, I agree with you. I would rather have Bayo as the number two than Sonny Gray. But here's where I give a little bit of pushback to that sentiment. We entered this offseason with Craig Breslow clearly saying we needed a number two, that we have a lot of threes and fours. And that was with Bayo on this roster. Okay. So when he goes out and gets Sonny, I would actually respect him more if they put Sonny Gray as number two. I don't agree with it. I don't think Sonny Gray is near a number two, but at least have the conviction. If you tell me we need it and that's what you get, then stick by it. And if it doesn't work, then you own it like a man. But no, the other sentiment,
I disagree, but I can wait.
All right. But as far as the fact that Bayo is, you know, a Red Sox, I don't disagree, but 2 years ago, I don't necessarily know if I want to put my stamp on the fact of Red Sox pride, the fact that he was the opening day starter. I mean, historically bad Red Sox teams compared to what we should be used to and accustomed to based on the budget that Jeremy outlined in our proud and rich history prior to the last 10 years. But the other thing is, like, Bobby Dalback was a Red Sox. Tristan Casas is a Red Sox. Doesn't mean I'm on him on my baseball team. And I'm not saying I don't want Brian Bayo on my baseball team, but I also don't want to get it mixed up where just because he's homegrown, like sometimes homegrown players, you got to get rid of them to upgrade. Or sometimes they're not what you want them to be as much as the fact that, like, yeah, he's a homegrown Red Sox. I would love for him to become a number one. I don't think he is. Can he become a number two? Maybe. I hope so. But he is definitely a number two over Sonny Gray. But again, front office told me we needed a number two, and they got Sonny Gray. So they should own that, is my point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that's them making a financial decision to get a player that they think can help and then overselling his ability to help. It's the Sam Kennedy how to tell the fan base what to think move, in my opinion. Like, Sonny Gray's a fine piece, and just we can all admit it was about the money, right? But don't sell him to me as the number two, because he's not the number two in a playoff start. He's not, and if he is, we're not going to win the series. So, I mean, look, guys, I don't know that the team is going to substantially change between now and spring training. If we get into a playoff series, Bayo has better stuff. He has to, or if Oviedo is that guy, I don't know. I haven't seen him pitch much, but like, I don't want Sonny Gray starting the second game of a playoff series. Like, to me, that's just that's bad news. That's not building a roster to win for 162 and then go win short series. So as the team is currently constituted, would we all agree that Bayo would get at least one of Crochet would get one start, and say we're going with three starting pitchers, he'd get one of the other two starts. And you're going to take that and subtract from this team. Again, we don't know what the return would be, and that might change the analysis. But like, the other thing is, man, do I hope that whoever's pitching when they're pitching is Cora's decision and nobody in the front office. So if Breslow comes down and tells Cora, you know, Gray's your number two, if I'm Cora, I'm going double Freedom Rockets and I'm starting Bayo.
I agree with everything you're saying, Jeremy, just so you know. But I also think that Cora's kind of complicit, because not for nothing, some of the things he does say, he doesn't strike me as a guy who makes very good decisions, especially when it comes to front office potential moves. So I think he might be on the same page with them. I hope he's not, because I agree with you. I do think that Bayo is number two. My point was is that the front office does dumb decisions, own them. So maybe I didn't communicate that clearly.
I got emotional and overreacted, which tends to happen.
What happened?
We don't do that. No. We're Red Sox.
Or I got emotional and overreacted.
No. I understand your point. So
yeah.
No, you know, when it comes to Bayo, I agree that he's been in situations where he's looked like he had the potential to be the number two. But I think that what I've got to say is that just because a guy is number two in the rotation doesn't mean he is a true number two. You know what I mean? Sometimes it just shows a weakness of the rotation. 100%. For the Red Sox, and really any team, I feel like in this league, you need co-aces almost to really guarantee a good playoff run. And I think that past Red Sox teams have proven that, where we've gone on deep playoff runs. I think past World Series champions have proven the same thing. You know, we're talking about Bayo versus Gray. But, you know, I'm talking about Curt Schilling and Pedro Martinez. You know what I mean? I'm talking about Chris Sale and David Price. You really need someone who's going to guarantee that when your ace is done, you're coming out the next day with a 3.5 ERA, you know? And Bayo was able to do that last year, but with some red flags that make me concerned that he's not going to be able to replicate that appearance. So I think this next year is kind of a make or break for him. You know, he's going to be 27 years old. It's time to really show what type of player Bayo is going to be and if he can be the number two. Godspeed. But otherwise, I mean, we're kind of rolling the dice, much like we were with Giolito versus Bayo. We're rolling the same set of dice, just instead of Giolito's name, it's Sonny Gray's attached.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you, Nick. He's not a number two, but he is a number two as we're currently built.
100%. And yeah. You know what? To give him some potential credit, because we don't know what the roster is going to look like, and let's assume he still is on the roster, right? Let's say we upgrade or continue to potentially upgrade the infield, right? And we do somehow get rid of Jaron Duran and we upgrade there defensively. Yeah, maybe Bale is more fringe number two, because let's face it. I mean, he pitches to contact, and with our infield defense the last couple of years, that's not a positive for him, right? And like, he's taking some of those negative statistics because of that, regardless of errors. And the same thing with the outfield. So maybe it is a little bit more favorable for him. But yeah, at this point, I don't think he is a number two. And but that's not his fault. That's more on the Red Sox.
Right. I say this. I think the same thing about when he was the number one starter, and you're like, the team's bad. It's like, well, that's not his fault. Like, he's going out there doing, giving all he can to a bad team.
No, 100%.
You know.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the other hot topic of the night, and really the Red Sox season overall, is this strange thing, right? Where, let's just lay it out. Like I said earlier in the show, like I've been saying, we entered this offseason with three clear needs. So far, we have filled two of them, filled being used very generously, but we've chosen to fill two of those clear needs with separate trades with the same team, which just so happens to be the St. Louis Cardinals, where our ex-GM or president of baseball operations or whatever title the Red Sox use, Chaim Bloom, happens to be running the show. It's this strange, strange thing where Breslow and Bloom, it's almost like they're trauma bonded. I'm pretty sure that Terry might have said something similar, where these guys are, you know, they're both coming out of this horrible Henry situation, right? It's like they're abused housewives almost. And they are subject to the whims of ownership. I mean, obviously, right? Chaim Bloom is going to the Cardinals. So far, it's hard to say how good a job he's done. Obviously, I feel like you need a few years to really be able to evaluate something like that, honestly. But it's so funny that these guys, Breslow and Bloom, are suddenly becoming this bizarre love affair across the MLB. And now people are saying, you know, something about Brendan Donovan. You know, some speculation that, oh, well, maybe we can use them as a one-stop shop, and maybe we can get our infielder there too. And I just don't know how I feel about it. What are your guys' reactions?
What's even so much more bizarre about this is that, like, we've had these trades, and they're singular trades. It's like, if you're going to go and pick all these players from one team, just do it in one fell swoop. Like, I couldn't wait to never see Chaim Bloom again. And now I constantly have to see him in the offseason when I don't want to see Craig Breslow. So it's like, talk about trauma. I'm traumatized at this point. The only way I feel like the Red Sox win this offseason with trades with the St. Louis Cardinals and Chaim Bloom is if somehow we can get the arch without getting rid of the sicko sign. I mean, if we could pull that off, kudos to you, Craig Breslow. But I mean, I'll tell you what, and I'm seeing comments in our chat here, and I agree. If somehow we trade for Donovan and that's the other bat, I'll lose it. I will freaking lose it, because yeah, he's a nice player, just like Contreras is a nice player. But I mean, Contreras is a lot better to me than Donovan as far as moving our roster in the right direction.
Definitely.
Donovan as a complimentary piece, if we were like already fringe World Series team and that's just like maybe one missing piece, especially for depth, cool. I'm good with it. But when you're trying to get better than other teams in your own division, two in which literally just went to the World Series back-to-back in the Blue Jays and Yankees, and we've lost what feels like half of our roster and just replenished it with a bunch of St. Louis Cardinals who weren't anywhere close to the playoffs, might I add, doesn't move me in the least bit. The only I take that back. Doesn't move me in a positive direction. It moves me one step closer to taking a step off a bridge.
Yeah, I want no part of Donovan, no part. I want more room for Mayer. I want more room for Christian Campbell. I want more room for, you know, I mean, I don't know, who knows what's up with Bregman, but I don't think, you know, the Bregman-Heim thing, it's funny, but like, it's not that crazy. I think a lot of GMs trade with their friends throughout all the sports, you know, but it is funny that, you know, it's like another one's coming up now and another one, but I want no part of Donovan. I don't think any fan really wants that trade to be done. It's just he's just not, you know, we want something big, and Donovan is not going to get anyone excited.
So on the Breslow Heim-Bloom thing, to me, it's just further proof that the Red Sox are a mid-market to small market team now. And why I say that is because Breslow and Heim are running a similar kind of business model, right? And at the beginning of it, when you are tearing it down and rebuilding, you're getting rid of your guaranteed money, your veterans that aren't going to be part of the upswing of the rebuild. And, you know, when you do that, sometimes you got to give them some money to get the contract in the, off the books. And on the other side of that business model is you want to take a, you want to be dealing with efficient, shorter term deals, which is what Sonny Gray is, which is what Wilson Contreras is. And so you have two teams running the same system at opposite ends of the model. And it just makes sense that they would be dealing with each other because they're running the same goddamn system. You know, I mean, I don't think there's anything more than that. I don't know if Heim and Breslow are buddies, or it's like two people with the same ex-spouse. And every time they talk, it's an hour long and the first 58 minutes are about the ex-spouse. Like I probably doubt that, especially because Breslow's still working for him. But it's really simple. And it just keeps coming. I hate to keep coming back to the same thing, but it's the business model. It's running. It's being run in the same two in these two programs. So this is what you get. You know, I mean, we plug the hole with Contreras, okay, and fine. If that's the player on the model, I don't hate it. He had 20 home runs and 80 RBIs last year. That essentially replaces the Bregman production. But you still have a hole at third or at second. So if you're committed to Meyer, who's our second baseman? Right now, that's got to come out front outside the system. It just has to. If you want to move, if you want to keep Meyer at second, which is where I think he should be, unless you want to put him at short and move Story over, then you still have a hole at third. So, you know, getting back to the Bayo thing, if you're going to fill that hole with Bayo, you know, then, you know, it starts to make sense. But again, you're weakening your pitching staff. But this is what we have to talk about, because instead of just going to pay Bregman or pay Bo Bichette, you have to come up with these sorts of deals to fill a spot. Every single person on our team here identified was a need. Number two pitcher, which they are half-assing because Sonny Gray is not a number two. First base, which they've now filled, and third base, which they haven't filled. So, I mean, you're going to get some other deal with some expiring contract with some money coming back so that they stay under the threshold, and then it's an efficient situation for the Red Sox. I hate it. I hate it. You're not trying to win. You're not seriously trying to win. What you're trying to do is get to 88, 90 wins, make the playoffs, say we're trying, say we're improving the program, sell out Fenway Park, get your Nesson viewership where it needs to be profitable, and you don't care if you don't get past the first round.
Yeah, right now, interestingly enough, for a while, you know, the FanGraphs projections had Sedan Rafaela getting a lot of starts at second base. I just noticed that on their model, they've removed that. Sedan Rafaela is now the everyday center fielder, which he should be, absolutely. But interestingly enough, of course, that leaves second base very barren. Romy Gonzalez is projected to be the main second baseman for the Red Sox, along with, you know, Nick Sogard, David Hamilton. And I'm sorry, but that just cannot be allowed to happen. I understand that in the past, the Red Sox have had successful teams despite having clear holes at a position. You go back to 2018, I don't think anyone would have said that they were confident with Brock Holt and Eduardo Nunez being the everyday second baseman. That would have been seen as a failure. And yet, fortunately, we were able to get a really good season out of Brock Holt, of course. Eduardo Nunez was able to do what he did, but you know, this team is not as potent at the other positions as 2018 was, right? You can get away with a hole in the lineup at second base if your first base situation, your third base, your shortstop, your outfield, your DH, everything is just stellar. So, okay, we have a mediocre second baseman. Right now, you need production. I'm sorry, but the Sox need production desperately out of every single guy in that lineup. You need a 1-9 threat because you don't have the big boppers that the Sox have had in the past. There's a serious lack of power, and that's where a player like Brendan Donovan comes in. This is a guy that I like on his own, but I don't like him for us. You need a guy in the lineup that's going to give you that power, hopefully going to give you really good infield defense, which, I mean, Bo Bichette's not going to do. Brendan Donovan and maybe could be adequate. Bregman is probably good. But, I mean, it's just a conundrum where you have this puzzle where you know exactly what piece you're looking for, and yet it's just not in the box right now. You know, it's getting taken off the board, and the Sox are really going to be left with a serious hole because I'm scared of Trevor Story as our everyday shortstop next year. I'm scared of Marcelo Meyer's health, and that man, even if he was perfectly healthy, can only play one position. He can't play second and third at the same time. You need someone else. And now that you're counting on Contreras at first base, there's the big question mark with Casas, big question mark with Christian Campbell. Where does Yoshida fit into it? You just can't have black holes in the lineup, man. And I'm sorry, but I don't have a lot of faith in a Gonzalez, Sogard, Hamilton, Chimera playing in the middle infield.
Well, you know, in the lineup with anchors in the lineup like Yoshida.
Yeah.
I assume this puts Casas either into a trade with no value, or once he's healthy, he's going to AAA. But I mean, it's just like, it's not well built.
Well, you know, I love Nick Sogard. So, but I do recognize that I don't want him playing second base every damn day. You know, it's almost like Craig wants to try and somewhat rebuild the spirit of the 2013 Red Sox, right? Because, like, if you remove David Ortiz from that lineup, we're really not that far off with this roster as far as offensively. Pitching was better on that team, although I think Croce, I mean, obviously from at the top end of it, is probably the strongest. But I mean, that's the thing, though. It's like, we don't have a big poppy in this lineup. There's not one on the market. I don't see us trading for one. And as much as I love our prospects, like, I don't see Roman Anthony hitting 40 home runs. I don't. If he gets to 30, I'd be happy at some point. Like, I don't see him as that type of player. Meyer, I would just love to not get hurt. I'll take that. And then Christian Campbell, I don't know what to expect. I mean, with his elevation as quick as it was through the system, and then him just flaming out as quick as he did, I mean, you just hope and pray that it wasn't just a flash in the pan moment. But I don't know what this team is going to do at this point. The truth is, there's options. Like, Bo Bichette's still out there. We have the money. Just go spend it. I know they're not going to, Jeremy, so don't panic. But it's super frustrating at this point. I really don't know what else is much to say.
Yeah. I agree. It's at this point, what else can you say except we want them to make the move. They're not making the move. The entire fan base is frustrated. The entire fan base isn't going to be happy with a Donovan move. We want to see Bichette. We want to see something significant that's actually going to make this team better and make this team an actual contender.
You know what is frustrating, though, Doug, before you say something, Nick or Jeremy? There is a part of the fan base that's happy with what we've done. And there is a part out there arguing that, like, oh my God, look at the charts on Donovan. He would be so complimentary. It's like, dude, shut the hell up. We're the Boston Red Sox. Like, I don't know what the hell they've done to the majority of our fan base, John Henry and company, but they have literally brainwashed us, not us, but the fan base as a whole, or a good portion, to where we're thinking like we're the freaking Pirates. Like, oh, I love these moves. So savvy. We don't have to spend. We could. It's like, just shut up. We're a top five franchise. We should be spending money. We are not a small market team. Stop acting like it. The reason why we're here is because you're accepting it, and the bastards won't.
Yeah, you know, we're at a point right now where if you look at the team's strengths, you know, pitching should be a strength, both starting and relief, right? The outfield is obviously such a strength that fans are demanding that one of the outfielders be traded to shore up a position of weakness. But the problem is that when you look at catcher, when you look at infield, when you look at DH, you are relying on too many things to go right. And you know they're not all going to. I'm sure some of them will. You know, if you said, all right, Wilson Contreras, Carlos Narvaez, Trevor Story, some of these guys are going to have good years. You know, I don't think they're all going to flop, but I don't think they're all going to hit either, you know, both literally and, you know, in the metaphorical sense of a, you know, of a bet. It's just one of those things where the Sox really need to add more top 10 players to their positions, right? You need a top 10 first baseman. You need a top 10 second baseman, because right now we are just like in the bottom half of the league in so many positional categories, it feels like. And you really need to fix that, man, because that is how you get exposed in the playoffs, right? That's how you eke out wins in the regular season, and then you get exposed by a good team because you just didn't have a deep enough lineup. You just didn't have a good day. You didn't have those guys to hit the home run when you needed it. I don't know, man. This season, I mean, the offseason, there's still time to go. There's still free agents on the board. There's still plenty of trades that could happen. Everyone's talking about, oh, well, you know, the JD signing didn't happen until, what was it, February or April? It was somewhere in that, right? February, I want to say, but I might be wrong. You know, there still can be a big signing like that or a big trade like that. But my general mood on it, my general read on it is I'm a lot more cynical, you know, than I am optimistic about that type of thing happening, just because I think Breslow has made a couple of good moves in the past, but I'm not sure if he's going to be able to sniff out that one move that we can all look back on, like the JD signing, and be like, that was it. That was the big, right? 2018, you had a lot of that. You had the Steve Pierce trade. You had the Nathan Eovaldi trade. You had the JD signing that preceded it. And I don't know, Breslow really needs to shore that up, because, you know, he had Crochet last year. He had Chapman. You know, that's two really good hits. The Bregman thing didn't really work out. In fact, it kind of made us worse in the long run. So it's just one of those situations where you're counting on your GM or president of baseball operations or whatever they're called to execute, and I'm not sure that Breslow can. Closing thoughts, guys?
Yeah, I don't think I
know. You nailed it.
The only thing I'll say to that is I think he's being, and I won't go deep into it because I've said it before, but I think he's being significantly limited by the business model put in place by John Henry and enforced by Sam Kennedy.
Yeah, and I will concede that point. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I hate it here.
Why can't we have nice things?
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas,
Merry everyone. Christmas, guys.
Thank you so much for joining us. I've been Nick, joined by Chris, Doug, and Jeremy. We've been the Bastards of Boston. We really do appreciate everyone listening in, watching in. Getting close to the end of the year now. I can speak on behalf of Terry and the rest of the Bastards crew that 2025, despite being quite the roller coaster for the Red Sox overall, 2025 has been a huge year for the Bastards of Boston. I'm so thankful to have been a part of it, you know, so you know, thank you for including me. And yeah, we look forward to hopefully an exciting offseason. Maybe the Sox can do something for us, put something under the Christmas tree. We'll see. Only time will tell. Take care, guys. Go Boston.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.